Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, couples come to me with a couple of different major problems, and one of the things that they come to me with really, well, it annoys me, but it also breaks my heart. And it's when I hear one of them say, "I love my wife or my husband, I'm just not in love with them anymore." And most of the time it's said with, you know, sadness and kind of a bit of confusion about how this happened. And sometimes they chalk it up to being with the wrong partner, or sometimes they even deny that the passion was ever there even in the beginning. But most of the time when I talk to them a little bit further, it becomes clear that the passion has died a slow and quiet death, mostly due to neglect. And, you know, let me be clear, guys. All relationships are going to change over time. The key is how they change. And what we don't realize is that a lot of how they change is up to us. And so joining me today to talk about how you can keep your marriage changing in a positive and desirable direction are relationship coaches and authors of The Soulmate Experience, A Practical Guide to Creating Extraordinary Relationships, and their other book, The Soulmate Lover, A Guide to Passionate and Lasting Love, Sex, and Intimacy. So I'm joined by Molly Apple and Joe Dunn. Thank you so much for coming on the program today. I so appreciate it.
Oh, we're so happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Leslie.
So the first question that I have, because we hear this all the time, is, you know, you have to find your soulmate, or so-and-so's my soulmate. What does that term mean to you guys? What exactly is a soulmate?
You know, the reason we used soulmate for our work was because people have this idea when they talk about that of somebody with whom they can feel this deep, intense connection on so many levels at once. And that's really what we mean by it. We honestly, either one of us believe that, Joe, I'm speaking for you here, but we've talked about this a lot.
Yes, we have.
Right. That there's just one of those out there. I've had several. from my study.
Well, I mean, I do think that's a misconception, because what I tell people is there are plenty of people who can be your soulmates. Now, again, obviously, there are certain characteristics that those people share in common, but how scary would it be if there was just one walking the planet for you? It's like, oh my gosh, we'd never find them.
We would never find them. One of the chapters in our book is called Raising Your Soulmate Potential. And we also talk about how to find somebody who has soulmate potential for you. And it is those characteristics of somebody who's ready and able to really make and create a great connection, a great relationship.
So the title of your book is The Soulmate Experience. So what exactly encompasses the soulmate experience?
Well, the reason we titled it The Soulmate Experience is because it's basically, you know, you've had that soulmate quality experience with family, with friends, with lovers, and that's what we're trying to talk about, is just that experience of what it is to actually be a soulmate and what it is to have a soulmate.
That experience of, I can talk to this person about anything. This person accepts me completely. This person is beside me, ready to help me grow and change. Essential qualities for a relationship, in our opinion, because growing and changing are the sign that something is alive, and we want an alive relationship.
Yeah.
Well, and I agree. I think that's a great description of it, because I think what happens, and you know, this is my little Don Quixote tilting at windmills, is, you know, people get married, you know, they look at the wedding as the end of the story, and it's like, or and for me it's the beginning, because, and that's why I called the show what I called it, is because this is something that is going to change and grow over time. And if we just stop paying attention to it or think that, well, the, you know, when we say I do means we're done, is where the problems come in, don't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah. I like to say that a relationship is a choice we make every day. And especially if we recognize that our partner is making that choice every day, we'll be less likely to be putting a whole lot of expectations on them about how they show up every day. We'll have open eyes when we see them, be able to see them as the person they are right now rather than as the person we thought they were in the past.
Or the person we married.
Yeah, want them to be in the future. It's one of the little tricks to keep that freshness there.
So is that what you guys mean when you talk about the soulmate model?
Hmm.
Well, it is. And we compare the soulmate model, basically the old-fashioned soulmate model to the new soulmate model.
The conventional model for relationship versus what we call the soulmate model. And yes, a lot of what we're talking about is how to keep seeing this person as somebody new every day. Come to the relationship with an open mind every day instead of a whole lot of baggage that we probably collected from our families and our cultures and our society, and especially the movies and television shows we watched as kids, indoctrinating us with all these ideas about what this person is supposed to be, especially on that day they say, I do.
Right. My wife is supposed to do these things. My husband is supposed to do these things.
Even if we don't think that consciously, we think it unconsciously. We act out of that.
Well, absolutely. And I've seen that because one of the first questions that I ask the people that I work with is define these six terms. What's a man? What's a woman? What's a husband? What's a wife? What's a mother? What's a father? Because we all have those ideas in our heads, and then they play out. And, you know, I want to talk about how they play out a little bit later in the conversation. But one of the things you guys say in the book is you talk about creating a context about how to create an intention for the relationship that allows it to adapt to changing circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
right.
I get that when I read that, but what I know is people don't like change. They don't want things to change. And I kind of laugh and I said, well, the only thing that we can guarantee is that change is going to happen. So how do you guys...
There was a school teacher that I worked with. I was an editor for many, many years. And he was a third grade teacher. And his theme for the year for all his third grade classes was that everything changes. And the children would talk about this every day. He thought that was the most important thing that they could leave third grade understanding. And that's just a wonderful context for life. So the idea of context is when
right.
we go into a relationship, we often don't really have an idea of why, except, you know, I love this person and this is what you do is you have this, you build this relationship. The idea of context is having a reason, a conscious reason for being together, for why you're there.
And it gives your relationship, you know, so much more purpose when you have this, especially if it's a shared context. Now, you might both have your own separate ones, but if you can come up with a shared context between the two of you, you know, it's kind of, we'd like to say it's sort of the guiding light for your relationship. You know, when things get a little bit sketchy and you can always come back to that context, say, hey, well, why am I here? Why am I doing this?
And I love that because it's, I always talk about if you have some kind of concept, whether it's a vision, I always talk like you have like a vision board or a vision statement or something about why are we doing this or where do we want to go? And then every decision can get bounced off of that. It's like, okay, so is this moving us in the direction we want to go or is it moving us away?
Absolutely.
And it's what you guys are talking about being intentional about this. And I always find that interesting when I talk with people about this because it seems so obvious.
Hmm.
But you're right. Most people say, you know, I always ask people, why did you get married? And they said, well, because we were in love. And I'm going, okay, and? You know, why then, you know, be in this relationship? Why, you know, and they look at me like I have three heads. And because I think on some level, they don't think that way. Is that what you guys kind of run into?
We get in a relationship, take it serious, we get married, it's just what we do, right? No need for a reason or an intention.
Mm-hmm. So if they don't have one, and often when you ask that question, people really don't have one, and to send them off and do a little exploration about, let's make an intention from this day forward why I'm in this relationship. And that may change over time. You know, it may be for the next 10 years, our shared goal in this relationship, our shared context, I like better than goal, is to raise our children to be, you know, productive members of society, to offer society something, to help this world out. You know, that might be a shared context. And it's lovely to have that when you're in some sort of challenging situation. You go, why are we together? Oh, yeah. Can we refocus on that? Can that help us in this moment?
And what we found is that so often it does, right? Coming back to that shared intention is really powerful for getting you back on track.
But so help me understand how you guys help people recognize, as you said, the allowing adaption to changing circumstances, because, you know, it is one of those things where, okay, so now we're getting married and we're starting our life together. Where are we going? And maybe at some point in time we want to have children. Okay, so how's that going to change things? And I know you guys are probably familiar with this statistic that even though many people get married or stay together because they want to have a family, they want those wonderful little rugrats, those little rugrats create all kinds of relationship problems because they just do. and usually the satisfaction in the relationship goes down. So how do people stay connected during these changing circumstances? How do they adopt their context?
Wow, that's a big question. To which we actually have lots of answers, because there are so many, to me, there are so many little tools we can have in that situation, right? And that I have two kids and this is going to change everything and they're going to take up a lot of my time. One of the most frequent tips you hear is that the parents have to have a date night. Now, mm-hmm. When we started interviewing people for our first book, we found that a lot of people, it sounded great in concept, but in
practice it didn't work out so well.
It actually made, especially the men we talked to, it made them anxious and, you know, because tonight I have to go out on this date and I'm not really feeling like it. I've got these pressing things at work.
Right.
And we really like to, we like the date night energy, and we like to bring some of that energy into our connection.
All the time.
Every night.
Yeah.
Sort of trying to save
and,
it up.
You know, well, and that's one of the things, and when I talk about couples spending time together, it's, okay, date night, if you're going to use that term, is to have fun and connect with each other. It's not time to talk about the bills or the health of the relationship or, you know, the problem with, you know, your teenager. It's to reconnect as man, woman, lovers, as this person who you want to stay connected with. And so and as far as I'm concerned, you don't even have to leave the house to do that.
Absolutely.
But
we have them all the time.
I see these couples. I see these couples at restaurants, and I want to go throw my card on the table because it's like, okay, guys, stop talking about this. Yeah.
You know, it's Thursday night date night for them, huh?
So have you ever had a couple meet at a restaurant, go separately, and meet there as though it was their first date?
No, but I love that idea.
Oh, my gosh. We've done this a few times ourselves, and oh, my gosh, it's so much fun. But we keep it going the whole time. It's not like, for 2 minutes, and then we get embarrassed. And then, No. We play this out. And
right.
Oh, my gosh.
Or saying, honey, I already know that about you. You don't need to share that with me again. Right, it's that.
You know this idea that you're telling me a story you told me before? If Joe starts telling me a story he told me before, I don't say, oh, yeah, I know, you told me. Never. This is my opportunity to let go of any preconceptions that I believe I heard this before and listen as though for the first time. And I
learned something new. Well, exactly. As you said that, I'm thinking, but what about those of us who watch movies over again or read the same book over again, and every time we read it, we take something different away. So why can't we do that with our partners when they're telling us the story that we've heard 10 times?
Great point.
Great point, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I love the opportunity for me when Joe's telling me something or telling something to a third party that I've heard before is to look at him and practice this letting go of any preconceptions, letting go of any thoughts about that, and really just watching him as though I'd never seen him before. It's a wonderful experience for me to do that.
And for me.
Well, and I think that does, then it sort of allows you to see them differently because, as we've said before, everybody changes. I've been married, I'm coming up on year 30 with my husband, or married 30 years together, 31, and I'm not the same person that I was when we met. I mean, obviously in some ways I am, but I've grown and he's grown and we're different. So being able to look at each other with fresh eyes, I love that. I think that's just really wonderful.
Yeah, we find many ways to practice that. One of the other ways that I love to do it is to ask somebody else who's met him, right, has been talking to him for a while, and I'll ask her, what do you see? So that I can see through her eyes, what do you see? What do you like about him? You know, and this is a very personal question, so I have to feel like the person's open to such an, sort of an intimate question. But every time I've done it, they've been very open to this. Wow, she wants to know what I see so that she can see him through, really see him through new eyes. And say, wow, I see
that's
this
a great
really
idea.
Friendly guy that, you know, seems really open to me and to new ideas. And it's such a gift, such a great...
A really powerful
it is.
Thing to do. Yeah.
Well, this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with relationship coaches and authors Molly Apple and Joe Dunn about how you can keep your relationship alive and vibrant through the years. So, you know, if your marriage has gone a bit stale and you want to reignite the spark, I might actually be able to help. Living with a less than ideal relationship isn't a given. And so you can take a moment and send me an email or give me a quick call and take advantage of my free, no obligation, absolutely confidential strategy session where we can talk about how to bring the excitement and passion back into your relationship. You can send me an email at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coachingnc.com. And or give me a call at 919-924-0463. And so, Molly and you guys, Molly and Joe, you guys said that earlier in the conversation about expectations. And I talk about expectations being the gremlins of relationships. I think they create all kinds of problems, and you have kind of a unique way of dealing with them. You talk about turning expectations into invitations. What do you mean?
This is a great one because, you know, as you know, Leslie, I mean, nobody likes to operate out of somebody else's expectation. It's just no fun, and we tend to resist, even if it's something we do willingly in another situation.
And there's about nothing that an expectation can bring into a relationship more powerfully than resentment.
Right.
So when they're not met.
We've been working
with this idea for a long time, but it's something that I've kind of perfected is when I'm looking for something I want from Joe, the idea that having any idea that he should do it will totally backfire. And I actually love that about him. He is not one to respond to somebody's expectation positively. So just to give you a little example of how this idea of invitation works, and what's critical to be able to do this is you really can't have an attachment to that person doing the thing you want them to do. That's a big,
can you say that again?
Yes.
Yeah, that's huge. Can you please say that again?
It is, and it's the major difference between an expectation and an invitation. An expectation, we want them to do that thing, and if they don't, we're going to get upset in some way, even if it's just low-level resentment, which is a horrible thing to add into the mix of your relationship. It's what causes probably, you know, half the half the relationship problems in the world are caused by that simmering resentment from all these things that you didn't get met. So the idea of invitation...
Yeah, I call it the kudzu of relationships.
Yeah. So the idea of invitation is we have to do this first step is of letting go of this idea that they should do this thing and that if they don't do this thing, we're going to get upset and realize they're a
free
person.
Or they don't love us or whatever the... Yeah, whatever the story is we tell ourselves.
Whatever the story is we tell ourselves. So once we've done that, I can ask in this non-attachment way for whatever it is I want. And I can also do it with love and humor. So just as a really quick example here, there was a day that Joe and I were at a retreat, and it was a sunny, warm day. I was wearing this sweet little dress I love, and we were walking up the staircase together outside. And we got to the top. I was walking in front of him, and I got to the top, and I realized I'm thinking, ooh, he's going to, you know, see my legs in this dress, and he's going to be all, you know, happy about that by the time we get to the top. And we got to the top, and he looks at me and says, now, which way do we have to go? Like, he didn't notice me at all.
Shame on him.
And in that moment, instead of, like, buying into this resentment that he didn't notice me because what was I holding? An expectation that he would, and his attention was diverted mm-hmm. somewhere else for whatever reason. I took his hand and said, right. Could you indulge me for a minute? We're going to walk back down these stairs. He had no idea what's going on, but he knows me by now. I do these crazy things. We get to the bottom of the stairs, and I say, we're going to walk up again. I'm going to walk in front of you, and I just want you to notice the dress I have on and, you know, the bare legs. And he's like, yeah. We get to the top.
He goes, how did I miss that before? Right.
Yeah, you missed that before.
I sure did. And we got to the top, and that was about all I could think of.
Yeah, he didn't even care where we were going after that. That's an invitation.
Wherever it wasn't where he wanted to go anyway by that time, yeah.
Yeah, right. It was my letting go of this idea that he should have done it already that enabled me to invite him to do it in a different way, and it changed everything. It probably changed the entire day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because we were laughing about it at the end and connecting over it instead of, you know, this simmering resentment, you know, that I might not even be aware of.
Right, and I've sort of told this story before on the show, and I know my mother doesn't listen to the show, so I can get away with telling it over again. Is I was walking behind her one day. We were all out on a hike, and she said to me, in all honesty, that she didn't think that women should have to ask for what they wanted. And luckily for her, she couldn't see my face. She couldn't see my jaw hit the ground, and I'm like going, oh my gosh, but that's that expectation that my partner should always know what I'm thinking, what I want, what, you know, and it's like, you know, and to me that's setting that's that expectation that sets everybody up for disappointment because how,
right.
I mean, do you know everything your partner is thinking and feeling and wanting? I mean, it's
the
crazy.
Only thing they can do is meet it and then you're essentially at zero. It's not a gift. I think our relationships would be a whole hell of a lot better if we said, my partner should never, ever be able to figure out or know what I want, so I'll always have to go, oh, how about this? Wow.
Right. I mean, I use the example, you know, because I talk a lot about meeting our partner's needs, but, you know, but I'm actually in charge of getting my own needs met because, you know, I will talk to my clients. I say, well, do you know when your partner's hungry? And they'll look at me like, well, how am I supposed to know that? Well, it's like, well, then how are they supposed to know that you have some unmet need? You know, it's like,
right.
You know, you might be able to assume that since they have, you know, since you haven't eaten for 5 hours and they've been with you for 5 hours, or maybe you hear their stomach rumble, okay, maybe they're hungry, but you wouldn't necessarily be able to proactively know they're hungry.
No.
Right.
And I like to look at Joe as though he's brand new in my life. And so I wouldn't, quote unquote, know these things about him because here's this person that I can ask, oh, are you hungry? Would you like something?
Yeah.
So much better than making that assumption.
Well, and that's, you know, so do you equate assumptions and expectations pretty close together? I mean, kind of similar, the same, kind of the same.
I think they're very, very closely related. Yeah.
And so I guess, you know, one of the things is, you know, I mean, and then of course there's that old phrase about what happens when you assume, which are some people like, yeah, stop that. So you guys talk about in the book about connecting on a soul level, and you talk about five simple practices mm-hmm. at the heart of relating. So can you quickly run through those five?
Well, let's see. Acceptance is a big one. Acceptance is a big one. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about, this is part of the grow and change thing, right? That we look at this person as somebody that we're going to accept whoever, whatever they are interested in, whatever their desires are, whatever, however they change in the coming years. If we can have an attitude of acceptance towards them instead of resistance, which is the opposite, it's going to be a whole lot easier to maintain an open, connected experience in our relationship.
And that goes for acceptance of ourselves too, right? The more that we can accept ourselves in a relationship, you know, the better off we're going to be.
So the second idea is about presence, which we hear a lot about.
And I mean, what better thing to have in a relationship than to be present with your partner, right? I mean, you know when your partner's off somewhere else, their head isn't there, and it's not any fun. But if you can be there with your partner, really, you know, really be there with them, I mean, that's a huge component.
That's what really turns any night into date night. You know, when we're making dinner and we're really there together, like experiencing whatever it is, tasting the food together, and which is
it might even only be in, you know, a 2-minute increment at a time, but it's still that opportunity for, you know, much deeper connection than we often have in the normal course of the day.
Mm-hmm. Then there is...
Right, and I think that's what people lose over time, is that they stop being present. We assume that this is what my partner's doing, whatever, but we actually stop being in that moment to see, is this really where my partner is or what my partner's doing?
And so often we even end up not seeing our partner for who they are now, mm-hmm. right? We see them as this image that we've developed over the course of our relationship. And so oftentimes we're not even looking to see, hey, are they that same person or are they somebody new? And, you know, they're always somebody new.
Right, yeah.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
So number three, I cut you off, Molly. Number three you were going to talk about. Mm-hmm.
Appreciation. You know, there's been so many studies done that nothing has to change in your life for you to feel way better about it if you just give yourself a little bit of time each day to feel grateful for what you do have. We tend so often mm-hmm. to focus on what we don't have, on what we think is not right, instead of focusing on what we do have and what is right. What is right with our lives? So, you know, the idea for us is... Can we bring a little of that appreciation in, you know, all during the day?
And there's so much you could bring in if you really put your attention on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, and I think a lot of it also goes to, and I tell this story, you know, my husband's usually an excellent gift giver. I mean, usually knocks it out of the park. And one year he went to Boston and came home with a gargoyle for me. And I'm looking at this gargoyle, and I'm looking at him, I'm going, you looked at that and thought of me. And so, but then when he explained, well, yeah, but gargoyles are protective. And, you know, it's like, oh, okay. You know, so it was appreciating what his approach was, not just sticking with, okay, you brought me home a gargoyle. I don't get it.
So I could expand your perspective on you. Through his eyes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what's number four?
Number four
is know that we're all connected. And that's so important, right? I mean, you know, in a spiritual sense, we are all connected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so to just keep that always in the forefront of your mind that,
you know, I think even the first thing that comes to me is you're with a person who, like you, has desires and wants and fears and all of this, and to realize that we all share, that's the human condition really, is that we all have those things. And it makes mm-hmm. me, just in the moment that I'm saying it here, look at Joe with more like,
compassion.
Yeah,
right?
Compassion. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, but I think sometimes that can get in the way because it's like, I don't want to admit that I'm scared, or I don't want to know that my partner is scared because they're supposed to take care of me. So if, you know, and I think that I love that, but I think that may be something that's difficult for people to do, mostly because of our own stuff, not because of anything our partner's doing.
Right, right. It is difficult, and yet it's so important. And you know, I mean, we want to be honest with ourselves and our partner.
Well, at least we think you have a better opportunity for a great relationship if you can be.
Right, right.
Absolutely.
Because what's number five? Bites us if we don't. So the last one is coming from a place of love instead of a place of fear. And so often we act out of our fear, right? If fear makes us do all kinds of crazy things. If we can learn to recognize when we're about to do, say, act something out of our fears and bring some consciousness into that so that our actions taken out, you know, out of a place of love or out of a place at least not out of fear are going to have more awareness and consciousness. They're going to be better actions. They're going to be
more powerful.
More powerful words than if we just spoke them out of fear and anger. So it's bringing that awareness, not letting fear and anger control your words or actions.
And I love that. So what would be your number one recommendation for how people could do that?
Yeah, well, you know, for me it took a few years to learn the awareness of when the anger or some kind of what we call a disconnecting emotion, an emotion that's going to make us feel disconnected from this person in front of us, when that starts arising in me, I want to not let it control my words or actions. That's the main thing. It takes some time to learn how to do that.
So self-awareness.
Self-awareness, watching that emotion arise in me and going, whoa, you know, I'm going to feel it instead of acting out it. You know, can I take a time out here? I can be honest with Joe, like, oh my gosh, I don't want to talk right now. Give me 10 minutes. I got to go, you know, let this stuff boil up rather than saying something that I'll wish I hadn't later.
And I agree. I think that helping our clients or helping people in general just be able to understand that just because I have a feeling doesn't mean I have to act on the feeling.
In fact,
almost always it's bad to act on the feeling unless, of course, somebody's about to get hit by a car and then you want to grab them out of the way. Act away. But, you know, but it's being able to figure out what is that feeling? Why is it here? What's it trying to tell me?
Mm-hmm.
And that,
what have I been
I think,
telling
opens
myself
the
that's
door.
Creating it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I love that connecting on a soul level. I love those five simple practices. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that you guys actually have a way of getting this information to people. So how can people find out what these, how to practice these practices? Where can they get some information about learning how to have a soulmate experience?
Uh-huh. So our website, thesoulmateexperience.com, we've got free chapters from all of our books up there. So that's a great place to start. We put out some of our most exciting, most helpful chapters so that people could have that right away. And our books are available, Soulmate Experience, A Soulmate Lover, and we actually have a third, 52 Prescriptions for Happiness, are available pretty much anywhere books are sold. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Talk to us. We have big communities there.
And our YouTube channel.
And our YouTube channel is Molly and Joe, M-A-L-I and Joe. A lot of
oh,
information
cool.
in those videos as well.
Yeah, they're fun.
And your website again?
TheSoulmateExperience.com.
Okay, .com. Terrific. Well, you know, this has been a great conversation, and I think you guys have given us some wonderful things to think about. And, you know, just because you're married doesn't mean you have to lose your love and passion. I think Joe and Molly put it really well and talked about this. And, you know, you can still have that spark, but you have to intentionally create it. If you ignore the fire, I can guarantee it's going to die. So there are actions that you can take each and every day to keep the love alive in your marriage. And what you need, And the question you have to ask is, what is it that you need to do or learn so that you're willing to take those actions? And one of those things you can do is to keep listening and learning about marriage, love, and intimacy on this show. And so, until next week, stay loving.